Well, it's vital to life and covers over 70% of the planet. Water. And today is, in fact, World Water Day. In our part of the world, the event has been highlighted by the fact that the provincial government's Healthy Watersheds Initiative has announced an allocation of $1 million to Living Lakes Canada for the development of a project aimed at determining water monitoring priorities and creating jobs in water monitoring and water-related restoration. Living Lakes Canada's executive director, Kat Hartwig, is with us today to talk about the big splash. And Kat, you are over in the Invermere area, so I guess it's a little bit later. It's almost brunch time over there.
Yeah, exactly. 1 hour later.
Kat, first, what does Living Lakes Canada do, and where exactly is the organization based?
So Living Lakes Canada is a non-for-profit charitable organization that works to normalize water stewardship, and particularly community-based water monitoring and grassroots mobilization, both in the Columbia Basin where we started. Actually, we got our start in... on the developing the Lake Windermere project in 2005. So we're based in the Columbia Basin, and we have an office in Nelson, but we also do work on testing protocols for water monitoring across Canada with Environment and Climate Change Canada and with a couple of universities. So we have some projects in throughout BC, Alberta, and in some other areas of Canada, but the bulk of our work starts in the Columbia Basin.
Okay, so it's a big question and an even bigger issue. Water demand globally is projected to increase by 55% between 2000 and 2050. Can you put the current state of the world's fresh water into perspective? What are the greatest challenges that we face?
Well, I'm not a water hydrologist, but I do read the reports, and the World Economic Forum and Global Risk Report has put water on security on the top of the agenda since 2013, and we're not even close to meeting the UN Sustainable Development Goal number 6 to make sure that there's water security and fresh water available for the citizens and ecosystems on the planet. So, the climate crisis and the biodiversity crisis are impacting water, but freshwater biodiversity is declining twice as fast as terrestrial and its marine counterparts.
And what about locally? What are some of the issues that the Columbia Basin is facing?
Well, locally, we would feel as though, you know, given all the glaciers and in the mountains, that we would be in good shape. But unfortunately, the Pacific Climate Change Consortium has done reports 2006, 2013, and more recently a report done by a local hydrologist in Nelson for the Columbia Basin Trust, as well as WWF reports suggesting that, first of all, we're in data arrears. But secondly, University of Victoria just released a study, as did UBC. So UBC's 30-year study suggests that we're past peak flow, and UVic's study suggests that our glaciers in the Columbia Basin will be gone within 60 years. So that's really going to impact water supply. But also compounded with that are the flood and drought regimes that we experience from climate change. So you can have a flood and a drought within one area within 1 month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fascinating times. Kat, talk a little bit about Healthy Watersheds, the Healthy Watersheds Initiative, and the Columbia Basin Water Hub. They're two pretty interesting projects.
Yeah, so the Healthy Watersheds Initiative was spurned by the provincial government to set aside $27 million managed and administered by the Real Estate Foundation of BC and Watershed BC. And the idea was to redistribute funds to 60 groups throughout the province to enhance the watershed security and make sure that conservation and stewardship and restoration initiatives were undertaken. So that's one thing. And then, sorry, what was the second part of your question?
You were going to talk a little bit about the hub project, the Columbia Basin Water
Hub. So the Columbia Basin Data Hub, we're actually launching it today, although it's been in the works for quite a few years. So what it is we've got some amazing groups in the Columbia Basin who've been doing and collecting water data for, you know, up to 20 years. And so what we're trying to do is make sure that we have a central repository for those data for both water quality and water quantity data sets, including groundwater and wetland information, so that when the projects wind up or when the leaders of these projects decide to retire, that the data sets don't retire to the basement with them, but rather that they're available for the public and for decision makers to help make more informed watershed and water allocation decisions.
I wanted to ask you about the job creation front, Kat. Are there going to be more jobs in the future in the area of water monitoring and water-related restoration?
Well, again, I'm not an economist and I don't know, but I just know what's happened within our small organization. You know, we started with 3 people, we're up to 13, and we've also got, 7 contractors employed. So I feel like it's a sector, that's growing significantly because it needs to, and because we really do need to start putting, our thoughts into building a green economy. So if we're, if we're doing restoration work in a watershed, we also want to make sure that we're not reducing the viability of that watershed with the extraction. So that switch to a greener economy is essential, I think. So I see it as a growth industry, certainly.
Right.
Kat, the Columbia Valley is home to the headwaters of both the Columbia River, of course, and not too far away, the Kootenai River. A lot of people don't understand the unique nature of the valley globally. What about the Columbia Valley is so unique and so worth and important to steward?
Well, first of all, it's the traditional territory of the Tanakh Nation and the Shuswap Indian Band, and so there's been people here in time immemorial. But secondly, it's home to the Columbia River wetlands, which is one of the longest intact migratory flyways remaining in North America. So for biodiversity, it's really huge. It's important. It's recognized internationally. It has global significance. Like its rams are designated. And the concern is, of course, that we want to make sure that this wetland stays intact because we're losing, so much biodiversity anyway. But it's interesting, the wetland by itself has 1,200 pieces of literature associated with it.
Wow.
So those will go into the data hub. But it also has 100 management plans. So there's that multi-jurisdictional gridlock of managing the wetlands as well, which we're trying to sort out with provincial and local government as well.
So beyond the multi-jurisdictional deadlocks, et cetera, it's a little lighter question. You got a favorite movie about water? There's some classics out there that deal either, romantically or politically or comically. I thought about Robert Redford's A River Runs Through It. There's Chinatown with Jack Nicholson. Wes Anderson's A Life Aquatic. There's lots of them. Have you got a favorite?
Let's see, I'm partial to Robert Redford. He's probably more my generation rather than Brad Pitt. But, actually my most favorite movie is Whale Rider.
Oh, yes.
But
it's
not freshwater. Yeah, but it's amazing.
Okay, how about on a more educational, edifying note, what documentary, book, or website would you recommend to people to look to better understand the vital importance of water and some of the challenges we're facing?
Oh, that's a difficult one because we've got Canadian authors, local authors who've written brilliant books. And, the classics are, When the River Runs Dry or Cadillac Desert, A Thirsty Land, Blue Covenant. There's quite a few books out there. I would suggest that people just Google the top, water-related or water scarcity books out there, yeah.
There's actually a show that I was watching last night on Netflix that is all about the commodification of water and how things started with a large investment bank in Australia purchasing the water rights to the Thames and all of the water that's provided for the people of London. So that I do know for a fact that is on Netflix. I'll be darned if I can remember what it's called because I fell asleep.
And it's interesting because there's also been documentaries and videos and stories about how we give personhood and we assign personhood to a river because it's sacred, like in New Zealand where the Maori have done that. So there's the juxtaposition of the non-commercialization of water and treating it as a scarce, not even a resource, as a sacred thing that it is.
Kat, we just got a couple minutes left, but how can Kootenai residents get more involved in stewardship of our lakes, rivers, and streams?
Well, I have to say, Kootenai residents are awesome. We are more engaged than many parts of Canada in terms of water stewardship, but if people feel so inclined, there's fantastic groups doing work in both the West and the East Kootenays. And so they could always connect with us and we could reconnect them if they're interested to volunteer or get trained in the various forms of water monitoring. And we're happy to do that, connect them with their local groups or they can connect with us and we can guide them as well.
Kat, the great work that you're doing out there. Again, it is International Water Day. We'll let you get back to your day, and thanks for all the good work, and keep us up to speed on what you're doing.
Yeah, and thanks so much for your interest. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
Kat. Take care.
That's Living Lakes Canada's Executive Director, Kat Hartwig, speaking to us from, I believe, the large metropolis, the metropolitan of Briscoe.
Briscoe.
Just down the road from Invermere. This, of course, March 22nd is World Water Day.